Let's start with that offshore wind story, because it's easy to read the headline. US pays German firm $1.2 billion to stop building wind projects and assume this is straightforward energy policy reversal. It is not that simple. The company in question had already secured federal leases, had already invested in site surveys and permitting, and had contractual expectations built around a regulatory environment that subsequently changed. So this $1.2 billion is not a policy decision, it's a settlement, closer in structure to an expropriation payment than a standard contract cancellation.
And the legal and diplomatic dimensions here are significant. Germany is a close NATO ally. Having the U.S. government effectively paying to neutralize a German company's legitimate business operations in American waters creates a precedent that foreign investors in U.S. energy infrastructure are going to be watching very carefully. If you're a European firm thinking about investing in American renewable projects, this outcome changes your risk calculus in a non-trivial way.
There's also the Jevons paradox angle, which actually connects to a piece the HN community was discussing separately today about what they're calling a reverse Jevons paradox. The classic Jevons argument is that efficiency gains in resource use tend to increase total consumption rather than reduce it. Better coal engines led to more coal use, not less. The reverse argument is that when you make something sufficiently inconvenient or expensive, you might actually reduce demand structurally, not just temporarily. Whether paying offshore wind developers to leave achieves that, or just shifts the energy mix in ways that invite other complications, that's the real question.
Worth noting that $1.2 billion is real money, and it comes from somewhere. That's federal spending to produce no energy infrastructure. The HN comments flag that this is roughly the construction cost of a mid-size offshore wind installation. So you're paying the price of a power plant to not have a power plant.
From the Meta ruling in New Mexico, $567 million ordered by a state court for harms to children's mental health. What makes this legally interesting is the theory of liability. This is not a federal action under Section 230. New Mexico is arguing that Meta's platform design, algorithmic recommendation systems, engagement optimization, the architecture of how content gets surfaced to minors, constitutes a product defect. That framing has been percolating in legal circles for a few years now, and if it holds up on appeal, it opens a very different avenue of accountability than anything we've seen at the federal level.
The product liability framing is clever because it sidesteps the Section 230 debate almost entirely. Section 230 protects platforms from liability for third-party content. But if the claim is that the recommendation algorithm itself is the harmful product, not any particular piece of content, then you're arguing about the platform's own design choices. That's a significantly harder defense for Meta to mount.
And $567 million, while substantial, is a fraction of Meta's quarterly revenue. The more material question is whether this ruling, if it survives appeal, becomes a template that other state attorneys general follow. Texas, Florida, California, several states have been developing similar theories of liability. A successful New Mexico ruling would be a green light for a wave of coordinated state-level litigation that, in aggregate, could produce damages that actually move the needle on Meta's balance sheet.
There's also a real conversation to have about the curriculum corner here, Marcus, because the antitrust angle keeps coming up in tech regulatory discussions. And I think a lot of our listeners would benefit from understanding the legal scaffolding.
You're right, Sarah. And antitrust is related to this, even if not directly invoked in the New Mexico case. Here's the baseline. The Sherman Antitrust Act, passed in 1890, has two core provisions. Section 1 prohibits contracts or conspiracies that unreasonably restrain trade, think price fixing between competitors. Section 2 prohibits monopolization, which is where things get complicated. People often assume that being the biggest company in your market means you're violating antitrust law. That's not how it works. Market share alone, even 90% market share, is not illegal. What Section 2 prohibits is using anti-competitive conduct to acquire or maintain a monopoly. The analogy I like is a marathon runner who wins by training harder versus one who wins by tripping every other runner. Both reach the finish line first. Only one broke the rules. The legal test is whether the company gained its position through superior products and innovation or through deliberate exclusion of competitors. That's why the DOJ's case against Google, for example, is focused on exclusive default agreements with device manufacturers, not simply on the fact that Google has 90% search market share.
And the relevance to Meta specifically is that regulators have been exploring whether Meta's acquisitions of Instagram and WhatsApp were precisely that kind of exclusionary conduct, buying potential competitors before they could grow large enough to threaten the core platform. The FTC's case on that theory has been grinding through courts for years now.
Right, and the New Mexico ruling doesn't resolve any of that, but it represents a different vector of accountability, consumer protection, and product liability rather than antitrust. Both can be true simultaneously. Meta could be a legal monopolist and also face product liability for its design choices. These are separate legal theories that can coexist.